Oh man, we're doing it. What's going on? We're doing this thing. It's a relatively new thing. And it's called XXY. I make music under the name Grandson. That's a thing that I do. And as I've been going along doing it and starting to have a little inkling of going on tour and playing shows and getting to meet other musicians, other people behind the scenes, I started to develop a real fascination for what makes them tick, what motivates them, what set them apart in their nature, or rather an evolution of how they got to this point. I think in tracing back the history and talking about the future, the singular purpose for me is helping other people, whether it's through navigating their own mental health, whether it's empowering them, giving them a sense of agency in their own lives, or even getting involved and realizing that these issues that are affecting us politically are important to give a shit about. Those are the places that I find my why, that I derive a lot of purpose out of. And so we're having conversations with people that have accomplished great things in music and beyond, in hopes that other people can learn a thing or two about themselves through these conversations. And we have Kevin Lyman here to hang out. I don't know how. Shouts out Ashley. And shout out to everybody behind the scenes, but we get to have a conversation now. So thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks for having me on. It's a nice new studios here.
So it's pretty clean at Adobe.
Adobe's moving up in the world.
Yeah,
awesome.
Let's go. Not bad. Good for Fish. Yeah, yeah. I'm not even really 100% sure where to start. I think that I'm sure you've done it 8 million times, but maybe we could just get a really quick overview of the history of your experience as an event planner, concert thrower, mastermind behind the scenes, the evolution of Warped Tour, and some of the things you've been working on now, if you'd be willing to indulge
us. I think it's interesting now, semi-post-Warped Tour. I guess I would normally have been in here now announcing lineups or playing music in a different sense. But, you know, when you really start to break down your life, which I'm going to be 59 coming up here in a few weeks, you start looking at it and go, my ultimate philosophy was music, philanthropy, and education. They were all drivers. Music always drove everything I did. A huge fan of live music. Never asked me to be in the studio, but I found that drive through live events and live. So I was always trying to thread those other two parts through it. Growing up in a little city east of here in Southern California called Claremont, it was kind of a blending of kind of, there was an education with all the Claremont colleges there. There was kind of a hippie culture there and a kind of a counterculture in that city that we always seemed like we were trying to do something to help someone. There was great peace marches across the country and they got stuck in the desert and we would throw a concert to get them Parmesan cheese because they said they were living on noodles. I mean, just remember things like that. So, and then as I gravitated semi more to the punk rock scene, this would be, late 70s, early 80s, I started realizing that, punks and hippies, and a lot of people hate me for this, had a lot of the same philosophy. We wanted change. We had ideas that we wanted our voices heard. And, one wore patchouli and one wore safety pins in my book. And I started, through that scene and then, cooking up with a company like Golden Voice early on. And Gary Tovar, we were always doing benefit shows for something. We were doing shows, the first Rock the Vote shows, the Rock for Choice shows. We would do shows, for Tibetan freedom. We would do, there was always something going on. We were a very active music scene in Los Angeles. And then, I was lucky enough in 1995 to start the Warped Tour and became the band's Warped Tour. And I think maybe a potential slight mistake. I always felt you just do things because you thought they were right. You didn't go out there and do them because you wanted accolades or you wanted things. But I think in some ways, it's funny now that I'm kind of post-Warped Tour and you put professor in front of my name now. People are going, they want to hear that story. You say, you worked with over 100 nonprofits each summer. You helped launch nationally. You helped A Voice for the Innocent to write Love on Her Arms, keep abreast. You took those people, but we really didn't know you did all that. We always looked at Warped Tour as a place for music, and I wish sometimes, I guess, maybe we should have talked about that a little bit more. I think internally within our circles of artists we worked with, people that toured on the road, but maybe we should have made a bigger deal about that. We were always kind of out there, like, I always felt Warped Tour was just doing its thing, flying under the radar most of the time. And then, you know, you kind of get to that point, been doing it a very, very long time. And I saw that a few years ago that, unfortunately, my passion and love of music was going away. I wasn't listening to music for anything more than thinking about booking it. Mm-hmm. And you were always listening to music because someone was like, oh, this band would be great for your tour, or, oh, you should be, you know, put them on the label and help my label or something. I wasn't really listening to music. So I knew it was time to get out a little bit. I wasn't getting goosebumps. And I always tell people that the minute you stop getting goosebumps is when you need to start looking for something else to do. And I felt like I wasn't being driven by the real reasons I got into this. So I started really looking at, and then, you know, it's fortuitous timing sometimes when I was approached to by the University of Southern California to become a professor there. I wasn't looking for a job necessarily at that moment. And they approached me. And I really thought about it, and it was tough sometimes for me in a sense that I do a lot of speaking at community colleges with young people and everything, and some people were like, well, why would you go to a school like USC? Why, you know, USC is known as, you know, I don't know, University of Spoiled Children. You've heard them all through the whole things. But I really, you know, I think this journey of mine has really allowed me to understand business. I've been involved in multiple successful businesses, if not beyond Warped Tour in my past, and I go, it's a good chance that these people, and it's our society, and you have to understand sometimes you're just a microcosm of society, that a lot of these people are going to maybe be running businesses in the future. And if they're running businesses, and you could take that philosophy that you've always had, that you want to have philanthropic parts of your business, you want to have, you know, you want to educate people, you want to treat people well, it might be a good fit. And they've allowed me to come over there. I'm very proud of, I don't preach to my kids about things, but 80% of my students now build philanthropic thought into their business plans. And I haven't taken a breath. You haven't asked another question. I just rambled. You wind me up and I keep going.
You're a fucking badass.
But so what ends up happening is, you know, and then there's still a lot of things going on out there in the world that I can now focus on. You know, other than booking a tour and worrying about doing 42 cities and, you know, the weather, climate change, which I'm a pretty good expert at telling you the climate is changing after not only Warped Tour, but Lollapalooza, 28 straight summers of being out there and watching the storms getting stronger. The patterns are much more severe. The storms come from different directions than they used to come. You know, I got tired of running towards the lightning. That's what I would say. I was always the one that had to run towards the lightning on everything. Mm. And if you choose to do that in this world, that's going to be, you know, whether it's getting the people safe from a parking lot, or when you're addressing something that you feel maybe is unjust. And, you know, trust me, my career took some heat at different times. But I still believe in due process. I still believe there was things out there that needed to be addressed. So I decided to step back, and you know, it's now allowed me. And then all of a sudden, doors are opening up. You know, it was great with Talinda Bennington, Chester mm-hmm. Bennington's wife, approaching me and telling me that, you know, she, of course, everyone comes to me and goes, let's do a tour. Let's do a tour of mental health. And I'm like, for my own mental health, I can't do a tour right now. But maybe we can think through this. And that led to the 320 Project. 320 was Chester's birthday, and then I'm like, oh wait, I'm now a professor. Maybe I can go into the educational world and create a class, which I have. And 20 students had to write a mission statement on why a festival of mental health awareness and education would be important to them. We accepted 20. There was 25 wrote the thing, and now we still have 15 of them working. And we're really excited about where this has gone. I mean, it's going to be May 9th at LA Live. It's going to be a free community event. The majority of it will be free. From 11 to 5, we're going to have now, we have over 40 mental health organizations that have signed up to come down, because I believe we have the resources out there. A lot of people just can't find them. Mm-hmm. We have lots of avenues to help people, but where do you turn?
Actually, I'm going to need a pen to take some notes because I have 15 different things I want to talk about right now. So give me that marker right there. First off, there's a million things to talk about there. One thing that you brought up that I quickly wanted to address is I ask myself a lot about – thank you so much. Whether or not by Trojan horsing in these elements of philanthropy – of providing resources, but that the Warped Tour was first and foremost this badass, collection of your favorite bands all getting together and coming to your city like the traveling circus and fairs of the early 20th century. I don't think people might have recognized at the time. I think that time will be very kind to Warped Tour in terms of how it provided a space. I think that a lot of those bands that you were booking, a lot of the people that were going to those shows were struggling with mental health, were very impacted by the sorts of outlets that were provided, not just through the cathartic expression of these songs, but through those sorts of outreach programs you were bringing to people's front door. I do think there is a lot more access than ever before to help if you're looking for it, but taking that first step can be incredibly intimidating, incredibly daunting. And I guess my question is, when putting together something like 320, in being upfront and going, hey, we are building a festival, we are building an event around wellness, around health, around suicide prevention, do you think that Warped Tour would have been as successful in promoting those sorts of ideals if people had known up front how important that was to you? And do you think that where do you think the intersection is of art, of commerce, and of philanthropy, and where and how does that hierarchical structure exist in such a way that you can make the maximum amount of difference?
Well, when you say Trojan horse, I guess that would be a good analogy. It was the idea that people genuinely, when you create fun, and if they're having fun, their minds are much more open. So I'd worked a lot of shows and benefit shows where there was people on stage preaching at you and pounding the table, and it was kind of the primary focus of that. And I just don't, I always was like, and it goes back to that education side, that when you really have some deep thought of people that really understood what Warped was, they were like, that was the largest classroom in America.
Mm.
And I always looked at it as the largest classroom in America had about 500,000 students. 90% of those students are going to be somewhere they're going to come out and have a good time. They're going to learn about their favorite bands. You're going to have a fun day in the sun. You're going to get sunburn. And then the kids who flunk out got kicked out. So it was like, but there was that 10% that are going to kind of semi-overachieve.
Mm-hmm.
So they become part of the whole culture. So they're not only there looking at bands, but they were coming to look at what's going to drive me? Am I going to stand for? Wait, these people stand for my favorite bands. I can stand for them. I could sign up for A Voice for the Innocent. I could be to write Love on Our Arms, Heart Support, all these. I'm going to find someone that I can get involved in my community.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that was, a big part of it was I felt that, when people are having fun, I think it was the way we Trojan horsed into everything. We Trojan horsed into corporate America to support punk rock.
Mm-hmm.
We gave them a platform, but they gave us some financial support to be able to bring a tour around all these kids. And Warped was always a tour I always felt it was not for everyone. And I will say that today. I will say the Warped Tour was never for everyone. A lot of people just didn't get it. A lot of people will never have got it. But you know what? I always said it was for the smart kids because they had to figure out their schedule each day. They had to remember their canned food for the food drive, their old cell phones. They were engaged. Did they donate blood? Are they going to get a chance to go backstage? So those kids had to be engaged from a super early point, that 10%. The other ones were just come and have a good time. And that's okay. That's really what people didn't, it was. And then there was people that would come to Warped and go, I don't get this. This is not for me. This is crazy. But you know what? It's you do, and you're going to, of course, the vocal people would be maybe the ones who would post online or something that they hated the Warped Tour, the negativity towards. But you know what? You had those one-on-one conversations. You still have those conversations. People still do. And it did really make people feel like they had a place where they could go and be accepted.
Yeah, it's really interesting. I think that we've had the opportunity. We've been asked to play a couple conferences, festivals that are sort of diluted in, well, what are we doing here? Is this a music festival? Is this a series of lectures? And sometimes I feel that the ambition of trying to make a difference can be such that the amount of people that are going to volunteer their money and time to go to something that is that broad a scope without their favorite bands being booked on it, without the fun being sacrosanct, being paramount, you end up not making much of a difference at all, even though you might be more... your ego might be able to be satiated and go and look at the difference that I'm making. And I've been struggling with that at trying to build a philanthropic component to my artist work. We tried to set up a nonprofit, and really quickly we realized the amount of effort it takes to run an effective and meaningful a nonprofit is really a lot more than most artists. Most artists want to make a difference, and most artists want to feel like they're making a difference.
Well, you know, and that I see it more happening again. I think the artists out there, you go to a show now and you see tabling again, mm-hmm. whether it's head count, mm-hmm. you see them out at shows now. That's an easy way for an artist to get involved.
Right.
And really, it is a lot to have a nonprofit. I have my foundation and everything. But an artist, I always believe, especially, it's simple to stand for something, whether you're going to collect pet food. I went down to the Palladium and I went saw Joyce Manor and a few bands, and they're collecting pet food out in front of the Palladium for the local shelter. Totally cool. Mm-hmm. You know, but the shelter kind of managed it. They put it out through their messaging, and their fans right. brought it. It didn't take a lot out of their days to make that happen.
Right, absolutely.
And so I think artists can look at it and find affiliations with people that they believe in. And, you know, it doesn't have to be political mm-hmm. because some people are always nervous about the political things because it might alienate part of their fan base. But you're starting to see people realize that, you know, yeah, if you stand for something in life, you're going to alienate someone.
Yeah, and if you can be so lucky as to give a fuck and be in a position to piss some people off with your sense of identity and with your sense of justice, your sense of purpose. And, you know, I want to really quickly shout out an organization called RPM, who I worked with through Atlantic, and I was able to have my message and my fan base – my project really served as an exoskeleton where RPM could come in and go, look, give us some causes that you're passionate about. We can help build the infrastructure and make these inlets, make these connections with these organizations. All you have to do is put the XX branding on it and get some kids at these shows to give a shit. Donate a portion of the merch. Donate a portion. You know, and by taking the time for somebody to dedicate their lives to making that a little bit easier for artists, you're making it easier for fans and you're making the world a better place. And I think those things are important. And it sounds like very early on you were always framing what you were doing through a lens of how can I help people? How can I make a difference? And I'm curious where that came from for you, if you had mentors along the way. Where did your sense of right and wrong really come from?
You don't really, it's always weird. Was it, you know, maybe I give back a lot, and you know, it would take some deep psychology thing to see. Maybe it was because I was adopted and someone gave me a chance, you know. I felt I had opportunities that maybe I wouldn't have had. But it was like, you know, just, it was really, when I look back, it was kind of probably growing up around that Claremont area and just being exposed to musicians like David Lindley, who were the No Nukes concert, and Jackson Browne used to hang out, and these people used to hang out in Claremont, and I'd kind of, by exposure to what they were doing and how easy it was when people get together to do something good. I was lucky enough a couple weeks ago to do this Australian Fire Relief benefit, and so fun. From 3 weeks to the end of the show, like a 3-week window, we sold out Club Novo, and it was Joe Rogan and Whitney Cummings and Jim Jeffries and Monty Franklin. And to watch it, when a community can pull together, how quickly they can move, and you can throw in your little support. I was able to help with the venues and things. You know, it worked. So there was that group. And then I think it was kind of, you know, I used to sell egg rolls in the Grateful Dead parking lot. And I used to watch Bill Graham. Bill Graham, one of our legendary promoters, out there, and he was always doing something, just little things for his community. And, you know, he cared about he cared about those fans, the fans that were there. He developed things like Rock Med because, you know, the medical situation was horrible at Grateful Dead concerts because a lot of people were potentially, you know, having a bad trip or bad things. And he just cared about his fans. So I think we evolved, you know, that was what we would confront new issues. And I never learned some things were easy when I used to do Board Aid and boarding for breast cancer and these snowboarding events. And those charities naturally progressed with me. But then we had to confront issues, you know, that maybe didn't exist. So that's really like when I went to with A Voice for the Innocent, I'm self-taught. I never went to school for any of this. And I found some people and used my resources to help bring them to the national forefront when I saw that kids. Or with Jamie when he was doing To Write Love in His Arms, and he was really a Florida-based nonprofit, but by helping him come out and give him a national platform. So I think like 320, you know, a lot of people are like, oh, are you going to do this? And like, Kevin, how are you going to do these in every city? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Maybe I'm just going to build the model that other people can duplicate. Mm. I'm funding this myself at this point and believe in it enough to do it. But maybe this could be a model that could be duplicated. And if an organization like SMG, AEG, can give, they have 300 facilities across the country.
I know you're watching this. Give this man a fucking, give this man a venue, please.
So, you know, maybe there'll be people within their community, just similar to maybe how people have done basement shows where entry points, 3 cans of food. Mm-hmm. And I would get emails that say, hey, I did a canned food drive in my basement and had a concert and we collected 35 cans of food. And I'm like, awesome. You know, so you just leave little things and you hope a few people that comes. But ultimately, I realized I was going to be less effective continuing to do it the way I was doing it, both mentally and physically. You know, and people couldn't believe I was still out there working the way I did. And now I'm focused in a more structured environment of the university program system, even though I'm tipping over a few boats over there in the meantime. We'll see how long they let me get away with some of this stuff right now. But we're working really hard on it. And then kind of working more in my community and maybe send other people out to do that giant national heavy lift.
Yeah. Well, I think by setting up the infrastructure and leading by example, there's no telling the different ways that legacy can live on and hopefully somebody can do it even better, you know?
Yeah, that's what I always say.
One of my big regrets is not blowing up fast enough to be able to do Warped Tour before it closed.
Well, you know, there's that thing about, you know, I was talking to a lot of people right now about, you know, there was, when I started Warped Tour, there was Lollapalooza. And one time I overheard a comment from someone I respect and see all the time, but he said, what is that guy trying to do, beat a dead horse with Lollapalooza? And I says, no, I was reinventing the wheel. I was doing something completely made. When everyone was going right, I was going left, you know, with this project and trying things completely different. So when I hear a lot of people, there's been a lot of talk, what's going to replace Warped Tour, what, you know, or people have tried to duplicate it or put something out. I'm going, you have to create something completely, totally different that sets the world on fire. Warped managed to set a certain community on fire for a long time.
And sounds now like a couple bands were literally set on fire.
Yeah,
well,
we had a few outhouses set on fire. There's some stories there, but that's the other radio shows, you know.
Yeah, right.
Story time with Kevin. But, you know, I think that's what we're right on. We're right on that cusp of bands and people and everyone realizing they just need to stand for something. Mm. And it's exciting in some ways. Maybe we needed to let our country become what it was and someone come into power to maybe wake people up. But it's been coming for a long time. Mm-hmm. We all got too complacent. We all sat around. We all thought things were so, you know, just everything was great because we were watching cats on Instagram.
Right. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're just going to keep rolling here, man. What a fucking pleasure. And we're motherfucking back. Unless you want to take a longer break.
No, I'm fine.
Let's go. Yeah, wow. I'm curious. It sounds like, you know, I feel that the intersection of progressive movements and music, it seems to be these ripples of so many people were so inspired by and in my generation by the 60s, by the peace movement at the time, by the anti-Vietnam sentiment, and then Martin Luther King gets shot in the head and Jimi Hendrix chokes on his own puke, and within like it seems that every single time young people get excited about something, they have a very quick window to make any meaningful change before that seems to give way to expressionism. It seems like there is this artistic drive to give a fuck about the world around us, let our art be a time capsule for the environment around us. And then when confronting the degree to which these systems are in place, we retreat into our own feelings, our own thoughts, because those things cannot be taken, cannot be pinned down. And then the movement kind of dies. Having watched a couple of those come and go, I'm curious whether you remain optimistic about music's capacity to make change, and just your relationship to that intersection, which is something that I've been really passionate about and trying to remain optimistic about. And there are times where I feel like I'm very proud of that, and other times where I feel very naive in believing in it.
Well, you know, I think the overstimulation we have sometimes, you know, we're getting news sources from so many different places and like microcosms of like what we listen to, you know. Someone that listens to Fox all day long has their narrow vision of society, and one someone who MSNBC. So, can music make change and difference? I was always saying, like, every generation, when something in politics seems to go, there would be great punk songs written. Mm. I'm a little disappointed right now in a lot of bands that you would be looking for these big rallying songs, not putting them out. Mm-hmm. Are they been told by their labels that you don't want to alienate people or piss people off? Don't write those big anthemic songs, you know? Will Rage Against the Machine, which sparked a generation of people to passionately get out. They had a lot of influence. And I was working out at Coachella, and when Rage played there, there was actual talk of a revolution starting in the campgrounds. And I was running the campgrounds, and there was a whole group out there. Can music instill that right now? Or are we using music as just such a background to our lives? You know, we're digesting, Spotify's playing all the time. Are we really listening to the lyrics? Are we hearing songs that are really, really can drive a generation? We have to. I mean, but it becomes overwhelming. If you read the news every day and you just, it can become overwhelming, and that causes mental, we have the highest rate of mental anxiety in this country right now. And I think a lot of it is driven by our media. The anxiety that we're all under, you need to break from technology a little bit. You need to get outside. You need to slow down a second and realize that, digest it, but then really think it. Don't just let it keep flooding and bouncing off of you and not really understanding what's going on. You see what's going on with coronavirus right now. That social media is driving coronavirus right now. Coronavirus is an important thing to understand, but it's not something we should be panicking about. There's schools, they're shutting down community events. There's all these things that, I don't know. I just think that's the problem. We react so quick to something that it doesn't stick, because it's the swell comes and breaks, and then we're on to the next thing.
And I feel like I don't want to give him too much credit, but I do feel that the current president of the United States does have an innate understanding of kind of blitzkrieging our ability to discern right from wrong, to discern what is a single straw that will break the back. It's just, you're so busy frustrated with the thing that happened 30 minutes ago that you completely lose sight of that this is a known criminal who has broken the law.
That he's dismantling our national park system. He'd love to dismantle things, social safety nets. I mean, if you read the budget that just came out that, we'll never pass.
Gutting $800 billion in social services. It's unbelievable.
But we don't have time to digest that, because every little tweet we react to, what crazy. The best thing you can do is just ignore him, because he's driving the narrative through short bursts.
What, in your opinion, I've been lucky enough to work with Tom Morello and pick his brain a bit. And I'm curious, of the many things that Rage inspired, that it inspired people to give a fuck. These iconic phrases of taking the power back and fuck you, I won't do what you tell me. The way that those lived for generations. I'm curious In your experience working with so many bands, working around so much art, what are the things you think that contribute to real change being made, and not just for 6 months, but for years? I'm curious, is it a clarity of message? What do you think that that concert promoters, that artists do right in advancing progressive causes?
Well, I think we need to, you know, understand and zero in as individuals and realize that we can't tackle the whole world. There's too much. It becomes overwhelming. If you try to tackle it all, it overwhelms you. But pick what's one thing that you really, really want to grab onto. And focus on that for a while and help make a difference there. You know, if you could help make a difference, and if you believe in the oceans and you go down and you get involved with Surf Rider Foundation and you see those little things when they clean the beaches or the riverbeds, and then you can see little incrementally things getting good, you could start expanding out. And that's what I really liked. Like, you know, when we were able to take those blood drives, you know, the blood drives that we started on Warped Tour in a small regional fashion, and take them to a national level. It wasn't overnight. It took us a few years to get there. It will overwhelm you. I mean, you know, just if you allow it to. And that's driving this whole mental health. And I think the road, you know, we talk about music a lot, about mental health and music. I mean, it's interesting as the dynamics of music have become streaming and touring has become a bigger part of our lives. And we all know that touring, the constant touring, has increased mental health situations in our industry.
Absolutely.
You know, there's no breaks anymore to reassimilate into our communities the way that we used to be able to tour for, you know, 6 months, and then you'd go out for Knockout, and then you'd have a year and a half off or something to assimilate. So I just think we're all going to have to, you know, but you have to put yourself in other people's shoes too. You have to put yourself in other people's shoes and kind of see where they're at.
Of the many, you know, I think that if people were to hear your story, read your story, they would think, here's somebody who has opportunities I've never had. Here's somebody who has a drive or ambition that I don't have. Maybe you could speak to one or two times where, in a relatable way, when you felt overwhelmed in trying to accomplish these things, or when you were really excited about a certain initiative that didn't.
You have those and you learn from them. Trust me, I can in the last few weeks. You know, I mean, one of the biggest things about the 320 project, it was this large free community festival. And then using Club Novo for panelists and speakers and one-on-one counselors available. And then films. We're going to be doing the Blue October film, which is a very interesting film about Justin and his journey from becoming very, very hot, selling a couple million records, to depression of the road. Depression leads to addiction. Mm-hmm. But he came out the other side. So we'll be premiering his movie at that. But, you know, you get there, and it was starting to overwhelm me because, you know, I went out to our music community and probably spoke to 100 agents and bands and managers and people, and had this Microsoft Theater idea to do a benefit show that all the money that would be split up amongst all the nonprofits at this event. And really, really, really reconfirms you sometimes that if you allow it, this music business is will break your heart all the time. Mm. And I wasn't getting anywhere, but I just sat back and just said, you know what? I'm going to turn this thing around. We've shrunk the size of the venue. We're going to do it at Club Novo that evening. So now bands aren't looking at it as, oh my gosh, we have to sell 7,000 tickets. It's a 1,400 seater ticket. And I can't really announce the bands yet, but the lineup is so awesome. And people step forward right away. Just got to you know, and I was really bummed. I was totally bummed. I was working on a big project for the summer, a touring, basically a Warped Tour of gaming that they brought me in to instill into the gaming community, which I think is their own community in a sense. And literally in the last week and a half, that project went away. So you just get up, you get bummed out, and then you just look at it and go, my motto's always been, all I'm going to do is run out of time. Mm. You hit a certain point. And then you find a great book I think every person that's listening to this should read. It's called Ikigai. Japanese philosophy of life, where, you know, you find your passion, you find out what you're good at, you know, what creative, and then how you can make money. You know, the money's at the bottom. So I do this Ikigai program. It's called Ikigai. It's a great way. Look it up online. It's about finding your Ikigai is when you can find all these things and blend them together. Mm. And and you work on it. And it's funny because the making money is at the bottom. And I always say, well, if you're going to university, your parents are going to want to see you that at the top. But I've always said, you know, it's okay. You know, we learned early that it was okay to make a living. And I've done better than I ever thought I would have. But it was never taking advantage of the scene that allowed you to be in the middle of it. And Ikigai. So if you get a chance, if your listeners, look up Ikigai. There's great graphs online. You can learn a lot. And I think right now I've kind of found my Ikigai. It's like you're going to get knocked back. Just get up, get going again, and see where we're going. Because the only thing I'm going to do is run out of time. Mm. I don't know how much more time I have left.
Mm. Wow. Let's take one last break and then keep talking right here on XXY. And we're back. I think that there are people that fancy themselves that want to do what I do but might not have signed up for the 8 years I spent getting high in a room alone trying to make beats that everybody hated. You know, Ashley, who is one of the most accomplished rock photographers in the last 10 years, people might want to be photographing the most famous artists in the world. They might not want to be doing street teaming on the street somewhere trying to promote some concert that nobody's going to go to. I'm curious what advice you might have for people that want to accomplish great things when it comes to putting together these sorts of events or making a difference in the space of mental health.
It really is patience, you know, and you don't know how to instill that. We got in such a thing. I worked 320 shows a year, helping other people look good, chase their creativity, make their creative before I stepped out. So I was really allowed to fail. Mm. I had the support of people who allowed me to fail.
Who were those people?
Oh my gosh! You know, you take the promoters across the country that gambled on that first Warped Tour. You can take the artists like No Doubt and Sublime who came on that first tour. You were allowed to fail. And the problem is, in this world, you know, patience and working, and people wanted, you know, nowadays people jump out too quick. It's in Australia, they call it the tall poppy syndrome. And the tall poppy thing is a field of poppies grows up. And unfortunately in this world, if the poppy grows too fast and it's above the rest, someone will try to chop your head off, you know? Build up that cachet and build up enough of a good reputation to get that chance. And that's what Warped was for me. It was my kind of, I'm throwing this all in, which I did, my own money I had saved and worked up from working 320 nights a year, to go out and chase that. And now it's great. It doesn't get easier because especially when you challenge it, I mean, there was a lot of people talking about big mental health festivals, some of the radio stations and all this, and they weren't really going. We're going from the ground up. We're getting the organizations and the speakers involved first, and then hopefully the artist will see that this is something I want to attach. We didn't just go get a giant artist attached and call it a mental health festival. Mm-hmm. Things aren't easy. They never get easier. The path of least resistance, and doing, and having good, being generous is not a weakness. And mm-hmm. unfortunately, in our business, sometimes being generous and kind can be viewed as a weakness. Mm-hmm. And I think that in society, it's viewed not as a strength when it really is. Weakness is actually a strength.
Yeah.
And showing your weakness once in a while is okay.
Yeah, I think that really resonates with me. And I think a lot of young people in the social media era, there is this instant gratification we're looking for. You want to be this finished product, and it's difficult to have the courage to present yourself in a vulnerable way and be honest with how much time this shit takes. I'm 26 years old. There are artists that have accomplished a lot more than me at a lot younger an age, and just trying to be consistent and trying to do the right thing and have a clear sense of that. And you know, I've been very privileged to come from a family that instilled that, that gave me the freedom to fail, as you mentioned, and I'm sure that your kids would say the same. And you know, a lot of people don't have that, and I think that that's one of the best things that music can be. And I think it's very unique to rock music as well, how young people want a name for the fan base. They want to feel a part of a clique or the grandkids. They want to feel an identity because a lot of them might not have that. And I just hope that with the Warped Tour taking a step back, and with hip hop music and lots of other genres that I personally am a huge fan of, eating up much more of the pie chart compared to rock music. I believe that rock has a unique relationship to community building and to vulnerability in that sense, and I just hope that the young generation has spaces where they can do that. And instead of waiting for somebody else to do it, I'm trying to do it right here with you.
Yeah, it's only a cycle. It'll come back. Rock's already, people are talking, rock's back, you know? I mean, it just moves quicker. The pendulum moves quicker now. Mm. You know, people want to jump on a wave. They don't realize that pendulum goes quicker.
Yeah.
So, you know, when the pendulum's going this way, stick with what you believe in. And I think that's what we did for 25 years with Warped, you know. And I got to that point with Warped where it was, oh, you need to go get this artist, and you need to get this artist, and you need to get this artist. Then I would look into it and, you know, and no offense, the SoundCloud rappers, they just didn't have great guidance going along with them. There wasn't this system behind them that would support them with their success. And look how many artists we lost. Mm. Look how many artists we've lost. And I look back at our generation, you know, the 90s when I did a story in Rolling Stone recently, and you don't write the headline, but I said somewhere in the story, we've lost a whole generation of artists, those artists from the 90s. Mm. We really have. And I was in the middle of all that. Mm-hmm. I was out on Lollapalooza. I worked with all those artists. And, you know, we now, I think we're starting to see it, and you hate talking about artists as a commodity, but hey, when our business is run by a small group of record labels and a small group of promoters, if they don't start taking care of the artists, I'm not a promoter anymore. I don't produce shows anymore. I'm doing this mental health festival. But if they don't start taking care of our artists, that's like killing off your commodity for the next 10, 20, 30 years. Mm. Who's going to fill those arenas when you look at the 90s? You know, Chris Cornell, you know. You know, it just, you know, Chester Bennington, you know, Lane Stanley, you know, it goes on and on. Those were the artists that were supposed to be filling the arenas now. So that's a commodity that's gone away. Who's going to fill those arenas? Because a lot of those older acts are starting to pull off the road. They're going out and doing maybe some casinos or something, but they're not going to tour that way anymore. And I'm afraid we've, you know, when you really look at this period right here, those artists that were just, you know, you wish some of them could have made it through, but God, you know, it's sad when you go to when it's almost a memorial a month for one of our artists.
Yeah. It's so hard to say no too, as an artist, you know, as somebody that this is my first time off the road for more than 3 consecutive weeks in 2 years, you know, and to be able to finally have the space that I didn't even know I needed to take, I feel very grateful. As I was talking in an earlier episode, that I at first met that with a lot of scarcity mentality. You know, I wasn't getting booked for some of these alternative radio festivals in December, and we had a tour fall through in January, February. I'm going, what the fuck is going on? Am I on the down right now? I just got here. And in retrospect, these couple months for my own mental health and for my sanity, I couldn't be more grateful for having the time off. And in the future, I hope that, you know, it's so oversaturated in so many ways. It's so tempting to want to just get on and stay on. And I think that transcends music, and there are people that are watching this that aren't in bands or anything, but trusting, I think the biggest thing that comes up when I think about those things is trust, having trust that you can put yourself first, you can prioritize your own physical mental health, and know that you will be in a better place to succeed. You'll work more efficiently, you'll work better after you've had the time off. Real quick, I want to give a shout out to Headcount, who have been helping put this thing on. And we're giving away one of these sexy, beautiful Gibson guitars, acoustic. Hold on, I'm fucking it up. One of these bad boys here is going and being raffled off every single month. Hold on, I'm fucking messing it up. And all you have to do is get registered to vote. All you have to do, hold on, let me find my thing, is text VOTERXX to 40649 to sign up for Headcount's election alerts and enter to win one of these Epiphone guitars signed by me and a different artist that I'm putting a song out with every single month. So it is 2020. It is a hugely important year. And you mentioned earlier the importance of just being passionate, of just giving a fuck. And I keep trying to make this segment non-denominational.
But hey, the bottom line is, if you don't vote, you have no say.
Yeah, just shut the fuck. You can't sit on Twitter.
Whatever you gotta do, you gotta get out and vote. Stop. Don't complain if you haven't voted.
In 2020, what's one singular issue that is among the most important to you?
Well, I would go, if I had to categorize it, medical insurance in our country to me is very, very important. Environmental issues are number two, and rebuilding our reputation as a kind and compassionate people to the rest of the world. I'm not saying open borders. I'm not saying that type of thing. Just that we are a kind and compassionate people.
Mm-hmm.
I always, when I travel with the country and I'd sit and tour all the time, and in the last few years, you would my truck drivers and bus drivers, a lot of them grew up in the South, and they're going to be very passionate at something. And I would say, when you really take guns as an issue, and you would say guns, I think you could fix this, because we always go back to the Second Amendment, you know, da 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 da. You're going to take my. I'm going. Would you add one word, the right to bear arms responsibly? 97% of the people, when you really discuss what's responsible, well, would you, if you're not, would you be willing to take, you know, a background check just to make sure that you weren't a felon that you didn't have before you got that gun? Responsible gun ownership in this country. I don't think, you know, there's 3% on each side of politics right now that dictate the narrative. I mean, you can look at it maybe when you say the Bernie bros right now, and then the diehard Trumpsters. But 94% of us can find common ground in this country. You really can. If we would all sit in a room and talk, we could find some common ground to build off of. But it's become so polarized, so driven by money right now, that common ground is so hard to find that I don't know. I just don't know. You know, it's going to take some very, very strong people. I know some people say, you know, oh, you're wrong. You're going to go complete. But we really are a country of centrists, mm-hmm. in a sense. We want to be able to work. We want to have medical insurance. You know, I think sometimes, and I've gotten in trouble with it, but who cares at this point? I say there should be an age that maybe the moment you start taking Social Security and Medicare, that you don't, you're just guaranteed that we guarantee you will be taken care of. But you know what? You're voting on the issues for people that are 50, 60 years younger than you. Your life has changed. I'd be willing to give up my voting rights at some point if I needed to.
Well, taking voter rights away, the idea that it's not a national holiday, the idea that, you know, that these that these debates aren't publicly funded, the idea that we allow the dominating narratives to be in this for-profit to make elections a capitalist enterprise, I think that that's contributes to why young people don't give a fuck. They feel excluded from the conversation.
I always say, like, you know, if let's say, and I don't know, whatever years at 65, they said, okay, Kevin, you know, you're going to get, we're going to make sure your Medicare is covered, your Social Security, your rights to it, but you can't vote. I'd be the type of person that would go, well, okay, then I'm going to go make sure there's 10 people that do vote. I'm going to put my time into registering other people to vote and getting my message out on a personal level. So, you know, I have some ideas. I don't know who listens to them.
I'd love to take people over the age of 80 and stuff them in a cannon and then just fucking fire them to the moon. That's how I would. That's how I would do.
Well, that's a little more since my dad's pretty cool. He's 90.
You do a somersault. All right, we got to wrap this shit up. I could literally do this all day, and I would love to have you back at some point. Yeah. The last thing, you know, we're trying to drive home this why. And what's one piece of practical advice you'd give to somebody who hasn't yet found their why?
Try everything. Keep your scope narrow. And I would just say, like, starting your why in music. I get so many people that say, I only want to work with this type of band. I want to work with this kind of, I go, I worked everything I possibly could. I exposed myself to every type of music out there. And then you start narrowing it down as your reputation grows. Mm. Or you find your why, do some work with different nonprofits. Find your community, do what you can do. And then you'll narrow down what that is. And then hopefully you get to a point, and like I said, look up Ikigai, look at the draw, and then you find that where, you know what, I found it, and I'm in pretty good space right now.
Good for you, man. Thank you so much for taking the time, and I think a lot of people are going to learn a lot from this, so I really appreciate it.
Thank you.